Okay, so welcome everyone to Yeshiva's Chaim Sanhedrin. It's a pleasure to be here. Today's topic is about Rav Moshe Feinstein. You see, the title of this year is Mo Face Hador. I decided to talk about this because recently someone asked me, what made Rav Moshe so great? What made him? And I gave an answer. I don't know how good of an answer it was. And then I was thinking about it a little more, if we could... Certainly, there's no single right answer, but I wanted to share some thoughts about this. So, Rav Avadia calls two people in the 20th century the Mofes Hador, the wonder of the generation, Rav Moshe and the Chazon Ish. This is at least Rabbi Sarfati pointed this out to me. So what was special about them? Why are they considered the Mofes Hador, the wonder of the generation? The answer is, perhaps, this is obviously a speculation, but unlike perhaps most poskim, at least of recent time, Rav Moshe, as well as the Chazon Ish, each in their own way, poskim based off of the Gemara. Now, of course, you can't ignore the Rishonim and everything until then, but I wanted to just see how this plays itself out in a very, very interesting way, and then maybe we'll get some insight, not just into Rav Moshe, but in terms of our own learning in general. So, let's just look at an example. The first tshuva you have over here, this Ma'ar Makom HaSheet is just a bunch of interesting tshuvos, is a tshuva from Rav Moshe. Here, you want to pass it to Yossi? It's a tshuva about temporary fillings. This is a tshuva that he wrote when he was still in Europe, actually, you could see. It's written in the year Tufrei Resh Pei Tes. He was still in Luban, in Russia, and he wrote it to his brother, his older brother, Rav Mordechai, who was the Av Beis Din of Shklov. And the question was a question of chatzitzos. Are temporary fillings a problem of chatzitzos? We know women have to go to the mikvah, and when women go to the mikvah, they can't have any chatzitzos on them. And the question is, sometimes a woman might have a temporary filling. Usually you get a temporary filling, maybe you need a crown or something like that. And they put this temporary filling on, might be for a couple of weeks, while they're making the crown. And it's covering the tooth. So maybe that would be a chatzitza. We assume permanent fillings aren't chatzitzos, though their chayada might have said that they were. But permanent fillings are not, because they become part of the body, and you're not makbid. But what about this temporary filling that's going to be removed? So, Rav Moshe says it's okay. And I want to just point out a couple of things that Rav Moshe says along the way in this tshuva and what that tells us. So, the first thing, I want to pass down that. So, the first thing that he says, I'm going to actually skip down to the last paragraph. We'll see that first. V'hine tolui zeh betam she'eno makbid eno chotzeitz. So we have a principle that's a chatzitza, which is miut ve'eno makbid, meaning to say it covers a minority of the body and it doesn't really bother you, is not a chatzitza. So he says, let's clarify chakira. What's the reason for it? Deha machmas debinatal debatal guf kevan shelo ichbas la im yishar sham v'nechshav kibisara. Or two, second possibility, to lav misham bitul gufu. Daha miuto hamakbid ein shayach shiyivatel davade tesirana mikol malkom ein chotzer. She has a chakira. Is it a din in vittel or is it not a din in vittel? Now, if we're learning dinei chatzitos, we try to actually understand what are the two tzadim and what are the rayas lakana, and that's what Moshe does. It's a very long tshuva. This is a long tshuva that's a series of very long tshuvos. But he clears a chakira. And he brings rayos from Shas one way or the other. And based off of those rayas, he paskins. And why is that so interesting? I think a lot of times people think that there's sort of like two paths in limud, right? We could either sort of, there's the lamdin and there's the posek. The lamdin clears chakiras and brings rayas and the like, and usually the lamdin isn't the posek, and that's oftentimes the case. And then there's the posek. And the posek brings lots of different shitos and tries to show what's the rov and might bring rayos, but it's lots of rayos are usually in the poskim and the like. So Rav Moshe over here What does he do? Rav Moshe declares a chakira, again, very much like you would imagine in any other Ion Shir, and he brings raya's. It was very much like, again, I mean, not just any Ion Shir, really good Ion Shir, but it was, it's not fundamentally different. And based off of that, he paskins. Well, what about achronim? I mean, like all tshuva svarim, you know, they're full of achronim. What does Rav Moshe say about achronim? So Rav Moshe, I don't know that he had a great bekiyas and achronim like some great poskim have. He certainly was a huge Talmud Chacham, who Shas called with Rishonim, Shulchan Aruch, Prima Gadim, but he didn't know lots and lots of svarim. But he writes over here that the Zichron Yosef might say a similar thing. How do you know the Zichron Yosef? The Zichron Yosef is quoted in the Pesachei Tshuva. So he basically says something interesting. The Zichron Yosef says a Vart and a Ravid, that even though you're planning to take it off later, and the Ravid seems to think it's a problem, but that's not really the Pshat and the Ravid. And Rav Moshe writes, well, maybe my Pshat's like the Zichron Yosef. And if not, so he should have said it anyway, even if he didn't. We'll just read how he says it. See, quotes the Pesachei Tshuva. Quotes that L'chori, there should be a problem, this temporary filling based off of the Ravid. The Ravid has a rule that if you have a chatzitza that right now you're not makbid about, but you're going to be makbid about it in the future, so then it's a chatzitza now. So, for example, let's say a ring, right? Women has a wedding ring. So right now she doesn't mind that she's wearing it, but when she needs dough, she takes off her ring. She doesn't want her ring to get all dirty. So even though right now she's not needing dough, since in the future she's going to care, so right now it's already an issue, and therefore it's a chatzitza. So Rav Moshe says, well, maybe the same thing is going to be true for this temporary filling. Right now she doesn't care, but in 2 weeks when her crown is ready, she will care. And he says, no, it's different. So let's look at just the second paragraph. Ach yish l'chalik d'mechalik bal zichron yosef, shuva pischei tshuva sifkatan aleph, de'imak pedis rak l'zman meruba, lo avya atak peidain sham. So he says this pshat and skip to where it's read. V'zeu kavanaso l'anias daiti. This is what he means. And if it doesn't mean it, it's right anyway. And the truth is, if you look at the Zichron Yosef inside, first of all, it's clear, Rav Moshe didn't look at the Zichron Yosef. Rav Moshe and Zichron Yosef did say something that's very similar, and they also said something that's very different. But the point is that Rav Moshe here, how is he paskining this? Very chamor shayla, paskining it by declaring a chakira, bringing rise from Shas, and saying, oh, there's an Achron that says like me. And if he doesn't say like me, it's right anyway. So I think that's one aspect of what Ravadia means when he's calling him the Mofes Hador. He really doesn't paskin like perhaps other poskin of his generation. Now, you don't get this in Rav Moshe's shorter tshuvos. I think a lot of times when people look up Rav Moshe's, they see many of his shorter tshuvos, and his shorter tshuvos have some of this, but not as much. In his longer tshuvos, you know, that are ten anafim and the like, that's where you see it. Rav Moshe is said to have complained that he said, people know me from Egros Moshe, but, you know, where I really put my hard work into is the Dibros Moshe, which nobody ever learns. Why does nobody learn it? Because they're impossible. They're like this, but they're like, 40 pages long, and they're very complex, and people don't have patience to read such shtiklach. I mean, if you bother doing it, you'll see it's worthwhile, but most people don't have the patience. But that's where you see Rav Moshe's koach and these longer tshuvos, which are, in a sense, much more similar to the style of the Dibros Moshe. Now, it's there's a similar lasho. You know, we'll get to it. And let's look at another tshuva. So here you have a tshuva from, it's actually the first, this was Tzadi Zion in Chelek Aleph, and the one we're going to read next is Kuf Aleph. There's a series over there of about five or six or seven, I don't remember, a very long tshuva. It's all in the realm of chatzitzos. And in a tshuva, he has a big hula. It's a big hula. There's a woman, and she couldn't go to the mikvah because if she got water in her ear, it would have been dangerous. Or whatever. She couldn't go to the mikvah plain. So if Moshe has an etzah, we don't have to get to the details over here, basically he said you could put cotton in her ear and put Vaseline on the cotton to keep it in the ear, and he says that's not going to be a chatzitza. There's a long tshuva why he thinks it's okay. So in a later tshuva, somebody apparently had written to him saying, like, who do you think you are? They're rayos, you know, the achronim don't say like this. You're paskening, this is an iser chamor, and, you know, okay, you think you have rayos, but who are you to pasken this way, in the way that we've just said? So Rav Moshe writes back to them, and that's the next source you have over here. Mashkas of Yedidi, Eich v'shaim anu lismoch al chidushim, ka'elu shebiarti l'maisa. How can we rely on chidushim, right? He's makel because he has a shtickle tire. He's a chidush. And then he's paskening on it. Could we pasken based off our shtiklach? U'befratshu neged eiz achronim. Hine, anitama, I am astounded by your very question. V'chi kvar nasa keitz agvul l'torah chas v'shalom. Do you think Torah has ended? Shenifzak rak ma shenimtza b'svarim. U'kshizdavnu she'elo shelo nimtzu b'svarim lo nachriyo sam. We're only going to, like, Torah's ended. All we have is the svarim that are written. So that's it. We just have to look at the svarim, and that's the end. And if a new shaila comes up that hasn't been addressed, we can't answer it. Even though we had rayos. Vaday linias daiti aser lomar kein. Chas v'shalom to say that. The vaday od yagdil Torah. Gam atab is manenu. Torah is forever. And we are always able to, in each and every generation, to look at Torah and find out the answers to our questions. Not only that, umechuyav, kol mish biyadu lachriya, kol din shiyav liyado, kefi ha'ef sherlo, b'chakira v'drisha heitev b'shas poskim. Someone who's able to do so is mechuyav to do so. You have to look at shas and poskim and try to answer the questions. B'avan ha'yishav, v'rayas mechonos, af shehu din chadash, shelo dibru odo sav b'sfarim. Okay, fine, that's a new shaila. But what about if it is addressed in Sfarim and the Sfarim say it's Aser? So is that the end of the story? No. Vade shitzar chamor agam kein lohavin oso. Ulachwiya bedato kodim shiore. We can't just go ahead when you have a shaila and you have a shaila, so what do you do? And when I say you, we're not talking about like you and me. We're talking about poskim, someone who's ugiel ora. So what does one do? So you just look at the Sfarim and say, oh, okay, this, I looked at the Sfarim, no debuta says it's Aser. That's the end of the story. That's not the way to paskin. The law, can't just paskin because you found it in a sefer. If you just paskin without having learned the sugya and understood the din, but it just says in the sefer, so that's what you paskin. That's not psak. That's what's called mor mitoch mishnaso. Shalzeh ne'amar hatanayim v'ali olam shemarin halach mitoch mishnasam v'sota daf chaf beis. And then he says, so no, rather we have to learn the sugya and we have to paskin based off of the rayos that we think are correct. Kevin she'enu neged poskim ha'mefursam in Baal Shulchan Aruch she'enu, let me not skip. Ayin Shem Rashi. V'af im hachra'aso, go back to where it's not bolded. V'af im hachra'aso lefamim neged eze ga'onim mirabos v'achronim. But what happens if you do? You learn this again. It turns out that your havan is against some of the gedolim achronim. Ma bekach havadai she'rishayin anu lach lokal achronim. What could it be? You have rayos. You could argue with the achronim. The gam lefamim al ezer rishonim, and you could even sometimes argue on rishonim, kishiyesh rayos nechonos, if you have good rayos. Va'ikr betaimim nechonim, akiyotu b'zeh amru ein ledayin elamash ein avroz. In other words, a dayan has to look at the sugya and paskin based off what he thinks is right. Kimifurish b'vav basra dafko flamed alfa and shabirashbam. Kim shenu negara poskava for samim ba'al yishulchan arach shenskabu l'chom nino senus. This is something interesting. This is a bigger topic. We can't go against the Shulchan Aruch. At least when the psak of the Shulchan Aruch was accepted. Why? What's the Shulchan Aruch so special? So he says, because the psakim of the Shulchan Aruch, generally speaking, have been universally accepted. and in a sense then become binding. It's reminiscent of the idea that the Rambam writes in this Hakdama to Mishneh Torah. The Rambam there writes, why is it that the rulings of the Bavli are binding and nothing after the Bavli? As we have to follow what it says in the Gemara. But post-Gemara, the Rambam says a similar type of thing. If you come to Havana and say, yeah, even if it's against, let's say, some of the Gaonim, you have to paskin, but you can't argue with the Gemara. Well, why not? Why can't you argue with the Gemara? If you could argue with the Gaonim, why can't you argue with the Gemara? So the Rambam explains, because the Psakim of the Gemara, specifically the Talmud Bavli, were universally accepted by Klal Yisrael, and as such they become binding. The Rambam indicates, and this is an idea that Rav Elchanan Wasserman develops, and Rav develops, and Shirin Lezecher Avi Mori, that the authority of the Sanhedrin really comes from the acceptance of Klal Yisrael. When Sanhedrin rules something, so then it's binding. You can't argue. Adrab, if you argue, you're in violation of you have to follow it. And if someone doesn't accept them, at a certain point, they can become a Zaken Mamre. So the same thing is true when you have something that was universally accepted by Klal Yisrael. Well, what was the last thing that was universally accepted by Klal Yisrael? The Rambam says that was the Talmud Bavli. And therefore, when the Talmud Bavli has a conclusion, now, a lot of times it's not so clear what the conclusion is, then it's debated. But when the Gemara has a conclusion, then that was accepted by Klal Yisrael. You can't argue with it anymore, at least without a new Sanhedrin, I suppose. So the Rav Moshe is saying a similar type of thing with respect to the Shulchan Aruch, at least, again, a lot of times the post can disagree with the Shulchan Aruch, but where you have a psak of the Shulchan Aruch that was accepted, so then it becomes binding. But other than that, even though you're arguing with people that you acknowledge are greater than you, then you have to do what you think is right, especially if you have rights. Again, Rav Moshe writes a similar point in Hakdama to Rav Moshe, the next source. Right? So that's what we do. We learn a sugya and we paskin based off of what we think is correct. What matters is the truth. This reminds me, this idea that we have to paskin what we think is right, and even if we arise against it from Achronim, and maybe even Rishonim, reminds me of another very interesting psak of Rav Moshe, which perhaps is somewhat understood. This is his position on abortion. So if you look at the next source, it's on the top of page 2, there's a tshuva of Rav Moshe, also he's a number of tshuvas on abortion. And Rav Moshe, without getting into too much detail, basically rules that abortions are murder. Now, there are times that if lo yatsa rosho, if the head has not come out of the woman's body, then you can kill the baby. But the Rambam explains the reason why you could abort the fetus is to save the mother's life is because it's like a din rotzeach. We see it that the baby is trying to kill the mother. But in the event that the mother's life isn't in danger, so then you can't abort. Rav Moshe says the fact that we have to come on to the idea, the svara, that you're allowed to abort because of rodef, which suggests that killing the fetus under other circumstances, aborting the fetus, would be a form of ritzicha. That was Rav Moshe's shita. Now, there's obviously those who disagree, but there seems to be a tosfos, at the very least, that is explicitly against Rav Moshe. The Rambam does sound like Rav Moshe, Kepashtos, but there's a tosis that sounds against it. So what's Rav Moshe going to do with this tosis? So let's just take a look. Hare, mefurish betosis on Hedron Shisrael, Nasru, gamkein barigas obrim beiser deritzicha. Sounds like from Tosis and Sanhedrin, the way Rav Moshe is reading it, is that aborting a fetus, even for a Jew, is considered tzicha. In other words, Gayim that abort are chayiv misa, Jews are not. You might have thought the fact that a Jew that aborts a fetus is now chayiv misa indicates that it's not tzicha. No. Tosis and Sanhedrin sounds like it's still tzicha. Vein litos, milashon hatosis nida, daf mem dal adam dal. Don't be mistaken by this Lashon Tosis Anita. So Tosis Anita really does not sound like Rav Moshe's theory. Dira Masel Ihu. Shekasu Shnei Pa'amim. Tosis writes there twice, Mutter Lahargo. which sounds like there's no iser of abortion, or certainly that it's not murder, because she asked him to slam the mutter hargo be batan afilu mesa imo the law the kemunach bekufsa man khalon of alav shabbes shemevi in sakin der sharabim look at haim, right? He's troubled by the question, since seemingly Tosa is saying since killing the fetus, since aborting is mutter, so why should it even be mutter to michal shabbes to save the fetus's life? Uv teirutzam kasud mikal mako mishum pikuach nefesh mchalon afagav de mutter hargo. So it sounds like from Tosfos that there is no iser of abortion. Certainly, that's not an iser etzicha. The pashut uvar shehu tosofer. You know what? Tosfos is a tosofer. It's not the right words. V'tzarch ligros imtim saloma de pater hahorgo b'vaten. Shouldn't say mutter. You should say pater. So since you're pater, you're not chayiv misa. You might have thought that you should be mechal shabbos kamash malon. Okay. And then he quotes other achronim that are against him, and he basically dismisses them. So there is a tshuva from the Tzitz Eliezer, the next source we have over here. The Tzitz Eliezer of Waldenburg is well known for having a very lenient stance with respect to abortions. We're not going to get into the details, but I just want to take a look at a critique he has against Rav Moshe, just this particular point, and try to understand it a little better. So the Tzitz Eliezer says like this, V'hine, im kol hakavod, lo adoni, lo zud adech, with all due respect of Moshe, this is not the proper way. V'chayim anu al pi divrei ga'onei doros, v'hema tarchu kol echad v'echad, l'fi darko, l'var la'amid kavanas divrei atosros benida uliashvam. Right, all the people, the poskim, who, let's say, take a more stringent view on abortion, seeing it's aser, so they try to figure out, what does the Tosas Anita mean? Because Tosas Anita sounds like it's okay. V'af echad mehem lo ala daito haderech hakala v'apshuta bioser lo mashish tos over der tos. Nobody said, right, we have all these tshuvos, nobody said, oh, just take out a pen and erase it. What are you doing with Moshe? Right? How could you do this? There's no manuscripts that say this. There's no evidence. How could you just go and say this is a tosofer? Because it goes against your shtickle taira. It's a tosofer. That's how we learn. Tosis, I have a riot. Tosis against me. Okay, change the gears up. That's what the Tzitz Eliezer says. So what would Rav Moshe say back? What was Rav Moshe saying? It's a very perplexing thing. There's another famous place where Rav Moshe says about a Sefer Hasidim, it's a Tosofer. The Talmidim ask him, what did Rav Moshe mean by this? So I once heard from Rav David Cohn from Brooklyn, the Rav Vulyaivitz. I heard this on, I think, a Headlines podcast. But I think it was a very... I think he might have... I don't remember. It's good to look at. Either he was saying this on his own, or he heard it from Rav Moshe. It was clear to him. But either way, he said, well, what was Rav Moshe doing? When Rav Moshe was saying Tosas is a Tosofer, really what Rav Moshe was saying is Tosas is wrong. Like he said before, if you rise against Rishonim, even Rishonim, you could argue. But it's not so nice. It's not derech kavod to say, certainly about a Rishon, that he's wrong. So a more respectful way to do that is to say it's a Tosofer. He said most people that read Rav Moshe knew that's what he meant. Nobody thought Rav Moshe was actually making a historical point to make a historical point you need historical evidence. He said this was the way of many Lithuanian poskim, not just Rav Moshe. And that's what Moshe was doing. And again, really the same idea that we saw before. Rav Moshe makes his position because he thinks he has lots of rayos. And he thinks Tosus is wrong. But instead of saying Tosus is wrong, derech kavod, he writes, it's a tos. Good question?
No, I mean, it just reminds me of something similar. I think, like, Art Scroll, like, when they were creating, one of those, for, like, Sefer Bereishis, like they quoted a like controversial.
The Rashbam.
They left out the Rashbam, and I think they justified it. It said like this is a forgery. Well, I wonder if like.
Okay. Could be. You know. Things that Rav Moshe could do that we couldn't do either. But yeah. No, first of all, I guess that brings it to a different point. I don't want you to go ahead and just think that Rav Moshe was this like maverick and brash posek that went around arguing with everybody. He was certainly very confident, as you see here. But he was also extraordinarily humble and cautious. I think somebody showed me many years ago that the New York Times once interviewed Rav Moshe, and they asked him, like, what made you the Posek Hador? And Rav Moshe said something like, well, you know, some people asked me some questions, and they liked the answers they got, so they came back for some more questions. Which is really true, in a sense. That is what made him the Posek Hador. Just that it was for a reason. It's not just it happened to be that way. Rav Moshe is definitely anava in Gedula B'Makom Echad. And you see that tremendous anava, not just in the myriad of stories about him, but also in his tshuvos themselves. There's a tshuva of like a woman who criticized him about something. You know, he writes her back in Yiddish. She didn't understand Hebrew. I'll just give one other tshuva where, you know, I think you sort of see that humility. This is an interesting tshuva. A tshuva, somebody basically saw Rav Moshe get into a car after Lech Benshin. In other words, we know that the calendars say candle lighting is 18 minutes before Shkia. But Shabbos doesn't start at 18 minutes before Shkia. But they saw Rav Moshe get into a car after the 18 minutes, or get out of a car after 18 minutes. He was driving some point, and so somebody writes Rav Moshe and says, you know, what are you doing? It's in Tochacha. So Moshe writes back in a very gentle way. He calls him a big Yerei Shamayim, and he says, it gave me so much pleasure to read your letter and that you're Mekayim the mitzvah of Tochacha as you understand it. And he writes him with such respect. And then he talks about even the person asking the question knew that it wasn't Shabbos, but he was concerned about Marisayan. So he talks about what Marisayan means and what it doesn't mean and why this isn't necessarily a violation of Marisayan. Marisayan is something, he writes, if you read where it's bolded, Kiyada Yadidi Asher Isser Marisayan, Hurak Bedavish Nasa Zeb Birova Pamin Bofen Aser. It's about an activity that typically would be done when this is done, it's Aser. Vlos Zeb Bofen Amutter. So that's not the case over here. That's not the case over here. And, but, he writes, Avali Komakom, since, you know, people might see, and they don't know, unlearned people, and it might lead to a Zilzal Shabbos, so then, Bli Neder, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to, you know, do Malacha after Lech Benshin. And he concludes again with such a gentleness. Yedido, Hamivarcho, Bischus Mitzvah Satochacha, Shekiem, Lechvod Hashem Yisbarcho, Lechvod HaShabbos Kodesh, Leshafa Bracha Shebal Yedekim Shmir Shabbos, Ulesuko Shalom. And there are many, many other such shuvas. Rav Moshe had tremendous anava, and in fact, there are many people throughout his career who criticized him, and he's very respectful of those who disagree with him, even though they're not always so respectful of him. It's certainly a case of anava and gedula b'makom echad. I want to bring out another aspect, I think, of what Rav Moshe. Again, I don't want to say what makes him unique. I don't think this makes him unique either, but something very, very extraordinary. This is actually something that's a little harder to understand, and we need to be careful when we see this. And that is the idea that sometimes you'll see in Poskim that they have what seems to be an agenda. And the question is, how does that relate to Pesach? What do I mean by an agenda? In other words, they're trying to justify a particular conclusion. So what does that mean, and what does that tell us? So I thought we would look at two tshuvos where you could maybe argue that you see this, and we'll try to understand what does that mean for us. So the two tshuvos you have over here. The first tshuva is a tshuva about using microphones at Shabbos. Not surprisingly, Rav Moshe says this is aser. And the question I was asked here by him was a rabbi. Sounds like this rabbi, could only get a job perhaps if he was in a shul where they had a microphone. And the microphone was turned on before Shabbos. It wasn't turned on Shabbos. And so the question is, would it be okay, let's say, for him to get up and give his sermon in front of the microphone? And he's not touching anything. He's not doing anything. It's seemingly very, very passive. Would that be okay? Right? Nobody, no havamina that it's much to turn on the microphone, but maybe just to speak. And there's a microphone there. Would that be okay? And especially because otherwise he wasn't going to get this shteller. And, Mustami could do very good things in the shteller. So that was the first question. Needless to say, he says it's aser. And we'll read the reasons in a moment. And then the second tshuva we have is a tshuva about hearing aids. Here, he's mako. Now, why is this so interesting? Because there's a lot of similarities between a microphone and a hearing aid. It's just one is very small, right? A hearing aid is basically a microphone, small microphone in your ear. So nobody could hear it except for the person who's hard of hearing. But mechanically, engineering, probably more or less the same thing. It takes the audio signals, it converts them into a digital signal, I guess, or analog, I don't know how it works, and then it makes it a little bit louder, it magnifies them, and that allows the person to hear. So, similarly, seemingly the same shaila. And you'll notice that in the first tshuva, he's trying very hard to be machmir. And in the second tshuva, he's trying very hard to be mako. So let's just take a look at the arguments he gives. So first, in the microphone tshuva, he has basically four arguments why it's aser. There are a number of tshuvas from the microphone. This isn't the first one. He refers back to his earlier tshuva, which was a bit longer. Here it's more of a summary. And he says it's absolutely aser, and there's four reasons why. Two of them are de'oraisa. There are two de'oraisa concerns. And two, the Rabbanan concern. That's why it's aser, even in the case where you're not even turning it on. In other words, leaving aside the issue of turning it on or not, just speaking in a room where there is a microphone, two de'oraisa concerns, two de Rabbanan concerns. So what are they? So they're labeled over here, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. The first two are de'oraisa, that the kol anishma ma microphone, einenu kol ha'adam atzmo, elek shemidaber nasa roshem. So what happens is that, the first thing when you speak into a microphone, it sort of converts your speaking voice into, I guess, a signal, an electric signal, an analog signal. And that is a problem. That's a problem because he says, first sounds like he's going to get into the issue of roshem. Roshem is a told of kosev. So even though no letters are being written, and it's not even anything that's sort of visibly that's written, but still there is an aspect of roshen here, which he thinks is a problem. Umashe nishma hu kol havara, right? It's not just a magnification of the voice; it's not really your voice. Zech shashesh adoraisa v'meshem. Bidiburo, Nasa Roshan Be'ezim Mako Ma microphone. Somewhere in the microphone system, the voice is being transformed into an electrical signal, I guess. Bavsha Ein Zeksiva Shein Osios. It's not actual kosev because there aren't letters. Al Kopadame Zechash Melach Me'arj Nishadish Ezedavar. But something is created here. Shali Dezen Nishma Kol Lam Umerachok. Such that now the voice can be heard from far away. It's much louder. It's magnified. What is or it is, not so clear. Ulay makabe patish, ulay bona. So maybe it's melachas makabe patish or bona. Tzorch line biru is melacha kopanim, tam zehu, lachos lezer deraisa. Af shalom bar ha'iser. Clearly we have a deraisa shaila here. I can't really tell you what melacha, but it's a chash deraisa for sure, and therefore you have to be machmir. Reason number two, second deraisa concern. Shalafi midas hakol nigdal hotzas koch ha'elektri, meaning to say that when I speak louder, then it gets louder, and that's going to increase the electrical current. V'nimtza shebediburo hu magdil umaktin es ha'elektri. So by speaking, you're sort of putting up the power, and that's a problem. And therefore, that's also skipping to the end of that paragraph. Yesh chashash deraisa af b'lo havara. There's even though clearly. There's a much more straightforward iser deraisa when using electrical things when there's an eish of some sort, like using an incandescent light bulb. Here there's no havara, nothing gets hot, there's no filament, but still that's a deraisa. Shaila, v'yesh lahem b'zeh tuva l'maisa. It would seem from both of these points that yes, Rav Moshe. You just had this line at the very least. We'll see what he says later. He's choshesh that using electricity is a deraisa shaila. And like you're saying correctly, not the view of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who thought that at worst it's a derabanan shaila, maybe more along the lines of the Chazanish. Chazanish thought with certainty it was a deraisa shaila. Rav Moshe is somewhat ambivalent, but that it's a chashash deraisa. So you're correct, you see over here. The next two reasons are derabanan. He says that even though you set this up before Shabbos, it's operating on Shabbos. Now, normally, things that operate on Shabbos, that you set up before Shabbos, is not a problem. We don't pass them like Bishamai. There's no Shvisas Kalim. However, where it's the type of thing where it's usually set up on Shabbos, then even if you set it up before Shabbos, it's Aser. So usually, how do you use a microphone? You don't just like leave the microphone on perpetually. How do you use a microphone? You turn it on, right? When you're ready to speak, you turn on the microphone. That's how you use a microphone. So too, over here, that should be a problem. Now, he says parenthetically, by the way, that's one of the reasons why it's usher to watch TV or radio on Shabbos, even though you left the TV on before Shabbos, so you put on a timer. Moshe was also very hesitant about timers. Maybe we could talk about that as well. I think it's a reflection of the same idea that we're going to see in this tshuva as well. Yeah.
I mean, how does like the Yom Shabbos work? Like, presumably, like in ancient times, like they wouldn't just like have a candle constantly burning. You would strike them.
Yeah, but you don't. But that's the point. Now, they last for a long time. You don't just the fact that you have Nero Shabbos on Shabbos doesn't suggest that they were lit on Shabbos. Oftentimes you just have the lights going. You're right, it doesn't last forever. But not so when it comes to something like the microphone. In other words, if I'm speaking with a microphone on Shabbos morning, you know, what does it look like? Well, under normal circumstances, if I'm speaking with a microphone on Monday morning, it's because I turned on the microphone on Monday morning. Okay. And then the fourth concern, also Durabban is Isser Kleishir, that Asru Shem Yisake, now even though this isn't a musical instrument, this type of magnification would be Bechlal that Gzeira. And he says, maybe you'll go ahead and you'll like set it up in such a way that it can't be fixed, and you don't need professionals to fix it, and it can't be fixed. Still, none of this works, because it's a Gzeira, it's a low plug, and therefore, it's Asru across the board. Okay, so that's his tshuva about microphones.
Doesn't Tosfos explicitly like permit that, like, I mean,
clapping?
Clapping based on
Tosfos in the fourth parak of Beitza, right?
Because we're not proficient in instruments.
So that even Tosfos wasn't makel for actually clay shear.
Oh, okay.
He was makel for clapping. Okay, so the next tshuva, and it's actually the very next tshuva in Igros Moshe, there happened to be a bunch of places where I think you sort of see this, that there are two tshuvos right next to each other that almost sound like the opposite points, and they're not a coincidence that they're next to each other. I mean, it also happens to be because the Igros Moshe is more or less organized al Seder Shulchan Aruch. So if you have two things on the same topic, they're going to be next to each other. But still, so this is a tshuva on hearing aids. And he writes that hearing aids are okay. So now we have to go back to the four reasons that he says for microphones and see how why they're not a problem for hearing aids. So so I put the same numbering. That's why it's Gimel first, and then Dalet, and then Aleph and Base. Those correspond to the reasons in the first one. So first he deals with the Rabbanan issues. The easiest Rabbanan issue to deal with is number three, which was the issue of Av Shemilsa, that the microphone makes noise, and he says that, look, this isn't going to be a problem over here for hearing aids. There's no Av Shemilsa because nobody hears it besides the person who's wearing the hearing aid. I mean, sometimes you hear people's hearing aids, but it's not supposed to be that way, right? That usually means something's wrong with it, right? So here there's no Av Shemilsa. Nobody notices anything. I mean, if I see somebody wearing a hearing aid, I'll realize that something's happening. But there's no Av Shemilsa issue over here. Fine. So that's the easy one. That's very simple. But what about the fourth reason that he says? Remember, the fourth reason was, and I'll turn to page four over here. The fourth reason was Gzeira Shema Yisakim Klishir. So he says a couple of interesting svaros over here, which make it very, I think, very interesting svaros. He says, you know what? Who uses a hearing aid? A minority, a small percentage of the population, people that are deaf or hard of hearing. Well, we have a principle in when it comes to making takanos chachamim, which is that b'makom lo shchiach lo gazru. If it's an unusual situation, there is no gzeira. Now, the way that I think usually we think that means is that, very interesting, you know, is that chachamim were making takanos to be choshish for far-fetched or uncommon scenarios, right? They didn't make the takana in that. But once they made a takana, l'chor et aser across the board, even if this particular case is unusual. Rav Moshe seems to not be saying this. Rav Moshe seems to be saying, no, that that even though it's a unusual, since it's an unusual situation, because most people could hear normally, so therefore the Zayir doesn't apply in an unusual situation. Now, how do we know that, you know, we could say Milsad al-Shchiach in a case like this? So I don't want to, running late, go into so much details about this, but I think there are actually a lot of raios to Rav Moshe's understanding of this principle, and he uses this kula in a whole bunch of different shuvos to come up with kulas in cases that seem to be against the Gemara, because he says, oh, this is a milsad al-shchicha, the gzeir doesn't apply. But since the Olam is learning Gittin, I'll just show you maybe two rais to this idea in Maseches Gittin. One is the Gemara in Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph in Parakas Shaleach in the Sugya of Prizbal. So the Gemara over there says they weren't misaki in Prizbal on a halva when the lova doesn't have karka, because it's a milsad al-shchicha. Right? Another example, maybe even a more straightforward raya, is from the first parak of Gittin, where we say over there that the general klal, right, of saying b'fane nechtav u'b'fane nechtam, gzeira that shemayach or davar l'kulkulo, doesn't apply in a case that's lo shchiach, like pikech v'nischaresh. Now you have to go ahead and then figure out, well, let's say a person has like a weird chatzitza. Do we say, oh, but chatzitza de rabbanan, right? Like the tshuva that we said before about the cotton in the ear with the Vaseline. Would we say, oh, it's unusual to have that, so it's lo shchiach, so therefore the gzeira doesn't apply? He doesn't really use that kula. The basic rule is that if it's a fundamental difference, then we could say, if this is fundamentally different than the normal case, then we'll say milsad al-shchicha lo gazru b'rabbanan. And Rav Moshe apparently felt that this case is fundamentally different. And then he also, an additional svara, which is over here, if we didn't allow the person to use the hearing aid, so it's really a very bad situation, that borderline pikuach nefesh. They might go outside, and they might not hear that a car is coming. Now, he says clearly that this isn't enough pikuach nefesh to be matir, I would otherwise be in a sedo raisa, for sure. I mean, then they don't have to go out. But he's saying that's a reason for us to assume that Ki Agavna lo gazru. In other words, when they made the gzeira against Shama Yisak and Kli Shir, it wouldn't apply to the hearing aid because A, it's unlikely, and B, because the gzeira in that case would have been very hurtful, very painful. And therefore, presumably they didn't make the gzeira. Okay, so the Rav Moshe got rid of the two gzeiros derabanans. What about the two deoraisa shaylas? So over here, he obviously here, you know, you have much less wiggle room, right? We're dealing with a deraisa shaylah. The microphone is a deraisa shaylah. What about a derabanan shaylah? So more or less what he says here is that since the deoraisa shaylas are not clear-cut, so we should be makel in a case like this where it's really a shasat chak gadol. Because, I mean, imagine a person like, you know, they can't hear all of Shabbos. That would be terrible. That would be horrible. And therefore, so take a look. This is on your last page where it says Aleph and Beis, right? Hamakeven shel barer, I'm reading where it's bolded, barer lan ha'iser b'zeh, leiz melacha nidmel zeh, right? We can't really tell exactly which melacha this was. If you remember back in the previous shuvah, we said, well, maybe it's not patish, maybe it's bona. We're not really sure. Shelachin ein biyadeinu la'aser l'chayla l'tzarech gadol kazeh. We have no right to aser it for a chola, for tzarech, or in this case, for such tzarech gadol. Me'achar shelo barlan iser, we can't point to a straightforward iser. T'hol lo nasa kol yoser ram mikfish nishma me'adam. Then he says maybe it's a little better, because it's not actually magnifying the sound louder than it would be heard for a normal person. In other words, it is louder because it's in there, but only because it's in their ears. It's not magnifying it, so it might be a little different. And likewise, with respect to issue number two, even though you are raising the electrical energy, but he says maybe you're not, and maybe even if you are, it's not bar, what type of iser it is. And therefore, we can't say it's aser. And especially if you think about the person wearing the hearing aid isn't doing an iser deraisa, right? It would only be the person speaking. And if I'm speaking in a room and someone's wearing a hearing aid, so then it's davshin miskave. And so maybe, wonders, maybe if you're able not to talk to a person wearing a hearing aid, maybe you should try to avoid it. If you can, signal to them instead of talking directly to them, because they could wear it. And when you're talking directly to them, if you're able to signal, that would be better. But if you can't, like it's a little girl who's 6 years old who needs to wear this hearing aid, then it would be okay, basically. So what do we see here? Again, I think Rav Moshe has an agenda. What's the agenda? Clearly, he thinks that, I wouldn't say pro-deaf people, but the Torah, if there's a way to make this mutter, right, we have to take into account the tremendous personal pain and suffering that the person would experience if they couldn't wear their hearing aid on Shabbos. And what about in the first tshuva? He also has an agenda. The agenda is that this would be, I think, he doesn't spell it out, but it would be totally wrong to upend the sanctity of Shabbos by allowing the use of electrical devices of this nature. Now, you can't go ahead and falsify Torah. If you want to say it's wrong because it's not Shabbistic, you could say that. You can't say it's Aser unless you have Rias that it's Aser. But when we approach a Shaila, on the one hand, we have to be absolutely honest. Rav Moshe is extraordinarily honest. But at the same time, it's not the pshat that we don't have, maybe agenda is the wrong word, but we don't have a certain netia. In other words, you know, And what makes his netia correct? So that's one of the reasons why he's the Gadol Hador. It's not just because of his mastery of Kol Tarchula, his Midos Mesukanos. This is another part of what made him the Posek Hador, which is it's the Siyata Dishmai. Kol Yisrael will accept him. It's not just that they happen to accept him, as we've seen. And he had, if you want to call it a fifth sense, if you want to call it Das Torah, if you want to call it Hashgacha, if you want to call it Ruach HaKodesh, whatever you want to call it. But yes, there is a posek has to go ahead and consider the consequences of their psak. You know, how will this affect things? If if the poskim had been matir, all sorts of electrical usage of things on Shabbos, then its surah of Shabbos would have been totally different. Again, it doesn't mean that you could just make up things. But that too is, I think, is a big part of it. So to summarize, one of the things that I think is incredibly awe-inspiring is reading Igros Moshe's. Again, especially those long ones. It's to see the brilliance, to see the Yerushalayim, to see how Lundus makes its way into Lemaisa, that there isn't just like two separate realms of Talmud Torah. To see how, in many ways, the types of intuition or agenda, or whatever you want to call it, that he had, in fact, does very much affect the bottom line. So I'll close with an interesting point. Maybe it's interesting, maybe it isn't. But, so somebody asked me, would it be okay to have a robo-posek? I think that's what they called it. In other words, now with like artificial intelligence, so we'll go ahead and we'll like plug in all of the tshuvos ever written and all of Shas and Poskin and the like, and the artificial intelligence will go ahead and take everything that's been written until now and be able to have a shaylin based off of all the above. And right, it's incredible. I mean, what artificial intelligence could do now. Whoever needs to write any more papers. So it's going to go ahead. And it doesn't just, it's not like, Bar Ilan responsa that people got very excited about. Then they realized it doesn't really help you so much in terms of paskening a shayla, because you have to know where to look and where to search and how to search. But nowadays, with AI, and we're not there yet, but one could imagine certainly, even with the technology we have, coming up with something where they could look at all the previous, all the Torah that's ever been written, and then use it to pop out a psak. So there are many, many, many reasons why I think that's incorrect. There are many, many reasons, but just one of them is you see here in Rav Moshe, right? Which is that it's not just about taking what was said before and applying it to the current shayla. There's the chiddush. Starts off with the chakira and comes up with something new. And adirabba, if all psak was looking in the past and then applying it to the current, so then, like he says, the psak would be dead. Torah would be dead. It'd come to a halt. That's not what Torah's never done. There's a chiddush. And if you say you can't come up with chidushim, then psak is dead. And then there's that second element that we saw. There is the idea of the agenda, the consequences, which are not just rooted in strict halachic considerations, but the broader considerations that emanate from Kol Torah Kula. As I said, that's maybe some of the things why Moshe was very much the Posek Ador, and as Rav Avadya calls him, the Mofes Ador. And again, it's something that perhaps we have a lot that we could learn from. Shkayach.